How often have you wondered what exactly is a milkshake duck? Welcome to the show, fellow ridiculous historians. And by the time this episode is over, you will know what a milkshake duck is. But I don't think we should spoil it just yet.
No, I mean, I just learned it myself, Ben. Apparently, it's part of the zeitgeist. It's a very, very current creation.
And you're Noel.
That's me.
We are not milkshake ducks ourselves.
I don't think so.
Neither, if one would hope. Neither, of course, is super producer Casey Pegram. When we were bandying this story about, at first I was a little concerned that it might be, and I pitched part of this, I was a little concerned that it might be too close thematically to some things we had done fairly recently.
Like the one where the guy tried to start an island nation?
similar. Sorry, I have the tune to Darkwing Duck stuck in my head, but it's Milkshake Duck.
Milkshake Duck, let's get dangerous.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So our story begins with a fellow named Gustav Broman.
Or as I like to call him, Broman.
Mm-hmm. So Gustav Broman makes big news. We don't know a ton about his, maybe his early life, but we do know when he popped in the eyes of the media. And that was in 1895. He made a pretty astonishing and ambitious claim.
He did. He claimed, or dare I say, he announced unequivocally that he would sail a 13-foot-long boat made from a cedar log across the Atlantic Ocean. This is big news, my friend. Big poppin' news.
He decreed it, yeah.
It was a feeding frenzy.
And remember, you know, the late 1800s, this is a time when these sorts of stunts are tremendously popular, right? So he would ride this log, which he called the Gustav Adolf II, in honor of course, the King of Sweden, right? What else would you name a canoe? But here's the thing. His plan seemed pretty ridiculous just from the beginning. So here's how he pitched his decree. He said, I am going to sail across the Atlantic in this amazing boat I've made from a cedar log. I'm going to start in Coos Bay, Oregon, which was then known as Marshfield, and then I'm going to sail down the coast to San Francisco. Notice the Atlantic is nowhere in the picture here yet.
Not yet.
And then he says, then I'm going to hop on a train with the boat and take the train across the country to New York.
So he's got a 13-foot boat. How is he transporting this thing? He's got a shipping container for
it's like
something?
A freight. He's taking it on the he's hitting the rails with it.
Got it.
So this idea seems pretty weird. Like, why wouldn't you just start in New York?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. It's almost as though he's got ulterior motives, Ben. Almost.
And this is where we learned a really weird phrase, or a phrase that was unfamiliar to us. Do you remember that quote that was published about Gustav's journey, which said, if arrangement can be made with the Overland Railroads upon his arrival in San Francisco, he will place machinery in his boat or put her on wheels, and by the use of naphtha or electricity, run her direct to New York by rail and then prepare for a transatlantic voyage.
Wait, I'm sorry, naphtha?
Right. So what the heck is naphtha? At first, I was confused because there's a brand of laundry soap called Fels Naphtha, which is used for treating stains, but naphtha is a flammable liquid hydrocarbon mixture. So it's
like a fuel?
Yeah, it's a fuel. Natural gas, petroleum distillates, distillation, coal tar, and peat, and in different areas and regions and different times, it could also just be a word for crude oil or refined products like kerosene. So let's amend this on my part. He was riding the rails, but he was going to make his boat into a miniature train car. That was part of his shtick.
So it would actually ride the rails itself independently.
Right, on wheels.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
People have done that. There's I have some car stuff episodes in the back about like a rocket sled on rails and things of that nature. But what happened next? How did he get all this? How did he accomplish all these amazing things?
Well, Ben, he didn't, my friend. He just didn't. It was what they call a fool's errand. It was as though he never really intended on having success in any of these. Because like you said earlier, it seems a little like he's going around as you know, something to get to is something else, right?
Yeah.
And why do it this way? It just seems utterly wrongheaded. And it was. And he had no intention of completing this mission.
Right. 4,000 people reportedly came to watch him attempt to sail down the coast again to San Francisco. His ship, which was pretty impractical, was immediately blown into a sandbar far enough from shore that nobody could get close enough to ask him what was going on.
So he just kind of hung out there for a while. He was out of reach. He was out of reach from any assistance. And then finally, luckily, the tides were on his side, and they kind of got him moving again.
Mm-hmm. The tides got him moving again. And on March 14th of 1895, he arrived in San Francisco aboard the steamer Arcata.
Wait, not on the Gustav Adolf?
No, it was in the cargo.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It's a little suspicious. So the LA Times reported that the captain of the steamer had taken Gustav Broman aboard to prevent him from drowning as his boat capsized over and over and over again.
We're getting some of this info from a fantastic article on Slate.com called Meet Gustav Broman, the 19th Century Man Who Attempted to Cross the Atlantic in a Log Boat by Matthew Desham. And there's some great excerpts from reporting from the time. Mm-hmm. And there's a really good AP headline we're going to get to in a little bit that just fills me with joy. But here's a little excerpt from the San Francisco Call piece. They were not feeling Mr. Broman's boat situation, or his, what do you call somebody that makes boats?
A shipwright? A shipwright?
Is that what it is? A shipwright?
Or a boatwright? Like, what's the difference between a ship and a boat?
That's a good question. I would say this is more of a boat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's give him some credit. Let's call him a boatwright.
A boatwright. They took issue with his boatwrighting skills and had this to say. The craft, fitted with contrivances never before seen on land or sea, and having more depth than beam, is about as safe for passenger service as a bale of hay. They laughed. Not content with the natural crankiness consequent upon its unship-like construction, the architect has riveted brass chain plates and other articles to the rail and deck. Absurd! Which further raises her center of gravity, making her an elegant and graceful capsizer. If it is safe to say that the bold navigator will navigate his uncanny and uninteresting craft into some fake museum, they are really giving it to him here, and it would be proven that she was designed not for ocean travel, but for the Midway nickel trade. And then they had a good laugh.
So you ad-libbed a lot of that.
Yep.
But I really appreciate how you were going from Matt Berry at the beginning.
Sure.
I think. Yeah. That's a true description.
Yeah.
Like that's we have to emphasize that. You can feel the snark on the San Francisco Call, but everything they're saying about this log boat is absolutely accurate.
No, it's true. I was just more tickled by the very haughty, taughty nature of the sick Burns in this writing.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying, like snarky. And they have that one line in the end from that excerpt. It says, she was designed not for ocean travel, but for the Midway nickel trade. And they were right that this boat seemed designed for something else, but they didn't know what the actual scheme was. You see, Gustav Broman, again, his real name as far as we know, was sort of already a celebrity, just not in boating circles. He was a celebrity to law enforcement. Police across California knew about this guy, and as soon as his boat made the news, his elegant capsizing boat?
That's right.
Law enforcement contacted reporters and gave them the hitherto unknown full details of Broman's life story. And this is where it gets stranger and stranger. We mentioned that earlier AP Wire headline, which is beautiful. A Russian Finn. He is a funny kind of finny cuss.
Oh, a finny cuss.
A finny cuss.
Yeah.
But there is a method in his cussedness, for with all his evil doings, he always comes out on top.
Uh-huh.
So this is where we learn about Gustav Broman.
And his rap sheet that was like a mile long.
Yeah. Okay, so you want to walk through some of these examples?
Boy, howdy, do I. Yeah, a funny kind of finny cuss indeed. So apparently he was known all over California for running a series of varying degrees of bonkers scams. And I'm laughing, but like one of them in particular is really cold-blooded, right, Ben?
Yes, one is definitely not. Look, we are often tempted to paint hilarious, cartoonish con artists as what they are, you know, buffoons. But we have to remember that a lot of these people are cold-blooded, right? So this is a reptilian thing. Gustav Broman makes his law enforcement debut in San Pedro, Los Angeles County. He is arrested for, or he had a hotel keeper arrested for robbing him of $100. But then later in court, it was proved there was nothing more than a blackmailing scheme that Broman had come up with to try to extort money from the hotel. He ended up getting caught essentially sleeping around with several women, and citizens, when they found out about his deceptive nature, literally tarred and feathered him and drove him out of town.
Wait, people really did that?
Yeah, people did that.
That's amazing.
That's not an expression.
So not only was he a cuss, he was also a lech.
Yes, he was both a cuss and a lech.
A lecherous cuss.
A lecherous cuss, or a cussed lech, right?
I like that a lot, Ben.
A cussorous lech?
Sure.
No, we're just churchifying words
so,
at this
I
point.
So.
But I like cussorous. It's like a filthy susurrus, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So this, although it may sound endearing because there's that instant karma that hits him, this doesn't really illustrate the true nature of this guy's behavior. The real reptilian stuff occurs in Santa Cruz, where he and his brother lived in what was described as a shanty.
Yeah, and there's some outdated language in this one. The AP refers to his brother as an imbecile, which today would obviously be considered a pretty nasty pejorative, but at the time it was actually a medical diagnosis, I believe, right?
That is correct, yeah.
For somebody with developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair way of saying it, Ben?
That's a very fair way of putting it. Comes from the Latin word imbecilis, meaning weak or weak-minded. And at the time, it included people who had an IQ of between 26 and 50, according to the testing methods they used.
That's right. And I believe there was even a time where people that were categorized as that were sterilized. There was forced sterilization of folks that were classified as being of lower IQ. It was a whole thing.
Yeah. And if you have the morbid interest in this, we can break it down for you. At the time when people used this sort of terminology as a description of cognitive ability, as they saw it, imbecile was in between idiot and moron. So an idiot was an IQ of 0 to 25, imbecile 26 to 50, and moron was 51 to 70. So these pejoratives have very specific meanings.
Yeah, for sure. And again, they were more or less like DSM level diagnoses or, you know, terms. Anyway, so Gustav's brother was that in the middle category of what you just mentioned?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. So he was certainly not someone that could fully take care of himself. And his brother really took advantage of that in the most ungodly, awful way you could possibly imagine.
Yes, he quite possibly committed fratricide. He took out two insurance policies on his brother's life, one for $5,000 and the other for $3,000. And let's go to a handy inflation calculator here just to see how much money that actually was. All right, Casey, if we could have that handy dandy inflation calculator sound cue, please, so people know it's working and we're not just making this up. Perfect. $3,000 in the 1890s would equal a little bit more than $86,000, and $5,000 would equal around $143,000, almost $144,000. So these were significant amounts of money. He took these two insurance policies out on his brother's life, and then what happened not a month later?
Yeah, the shanty burned to the ground with the brother inside, and he was also burned to the ground.
The insurance companies say, this is sketchy.
Yeah, of course it was. It's always a red flag when you take out an insurance policy on someone, and then a month later they die in a tragic accident. That's not a good look for Gustav.
And so the insurance companies say, we're not going to pay. This is ridiculous. The cops arrest Broman, and he is charged with arson and murder, and it does go to trial.
Yeah, and there's a woman at the trial who really reads him the riot act and gives a very strongly worded testimony against him, but he received a new trial, and she kind of changed her tune a little bit, almost as though she were coerced or arm twisted in some way. Ben, is that what you're thinking here?
Or turned. You can...
Flipped is what they call it in the mob, right?
Right. Nobody ever went broke betting on other people's moral failings. You know what I mean? So he was discharged. He got the insurance money. And then afterwards, they learned that the woman changed her testimony because he had promised to give her a large lump of scratch.
A piece.
Yeah. A vig.
Yeah, oh, my goodness. This guy.
If she would not testify against him on that second go-round.
That's right.
And then he, I guess maybe he cleaned up his act a little bit, Noel, because he moved to San Francisco and decided he was going to be a decent man.
Well, he was a wealthy man at this point, right? He got those insurance payouts.
That's true.
I mean, I don't know. It wasn't like millionaire money.
No, no.
But enough to start a new life in a new town, right?
Sure, at that time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So he met a nice lady, met a nice nice woman.
Mm-hmm. She was named... You will hear alternately described as Mrs. Leroy or simply Mrs. Roy. Mm. She was both a widow and wealthy.
The old marry the wealthy widow scam. Mm-hmm. We moved on to that one.
WW.
Nope.
Which is the origin of the IRS tax form, the W-2.
Yeah. Is that true?
Probably. Maybe.
Okay. I'm going to choose to believe that, because that's what I do.
So what happened? What happened?
Well, what happened was he put a ring on it, on Mrs. Leroy, a big old rock, a very valuable diamond ring.
So things look to be, optimistic, trending toward perhaps a happy ending, if we want to believe in the inherent goodness of all people.
Well, you mean the idea that people change, that people can change for the better?
Right.
What is it you always say, Ben? People don't really change. They just become
more people. We say people change, and that's true, but it's a misnomer. As time goes on, we become more concentrated versions of ourselves.
Yeah, it seems like it was happening with our boy, our boy Broman here.
Possibly. The police did not believe that he had turned over a new leaf. They had heard that Broman was back in town.
They're like, we got our eye on you, Broman.
Because this is the time in American history where you could actually have someone go into a town and then one of the townspeople say, you got a lot of nerve showing your face around here. You know what I mean? I don't know if that still happens in the U.S. anymore.
That's probably where the expression get right out of town came from.
We should bring that back. That's good.
I like to use it from time to time.
I think it fits. I think it's really well
done. No, but I only use it in anger when I want someone to literally leave town forever. I say it in kind of a funny way, so they're typically confused.
They're probably getting mixed messages.
I go, get right out of town. And then they go, huck, huck. And I'm like, no, go. I don't want you here.
Well, I hope you don't have too many of those situations, man. It sounds like real weird Larry David moment.
Ben, I am flush with enemies, sir.
You're flush with enemies.
Yep.
Well, then you might have something in common with Broman. I hope none of your enemies are in law enforcement. They say, we know what you're doing. You have a lot of noive coming back here. And we don't have anything on you yet, but we know how you operate, Gustav. So we strongly advise you to leave the state. Don't make this ugly.
Yeah, you're right, Ben. He was definitely flushed with enemies. It looks almost as though he never met a man or woman that he didn't turn into an enemy. As it turns out, the woman from Santa Cruz, who herself, not a particularly law-abiding citizen.
True.
She flouted the law, flipped her testimony in exchange for ill-gotten blood money, from the cold-blooded burning alive of a person with a developmental disability. She was going to just take that money and run with it. But hey, surprise, surprise, she got her instant karma too, and he didn't pay. could have told her that was coming.
Yeah, not exactly a Shyamalan plot twist.
Uh-uh. So she came a gunning for him, didn't she, Ben?
Mm-hmm. And he knew—
Or a knifing.
He knew that the cops were on the way, this angry person from Santa Cruz was threatening to kill him. And if she really wanted to burn down the house, she could also take him to jail for witness tampering, knowing that she would get charged with perjury. So he took the famous advice that so many sketchy people have received or given to one another throughout the years, and he hightailed it for Mexico. He went south of the border. He went down south to get out of the heat. You know what I mean? Wait for it to die down.
Totally. And there he would remain, Ben, for a year's time. I don't know why I'm talking like this. I think it's from the AP report that we read in the old-timey language. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of like lapsing into that a little bit. A year's time.
And there he took his constitutional.
Indeed.
For the better part of four seasons.
A year's time.
And as the seasons passed and the heat dissipated, so Broman sallied forth yet again for these states united.
Mopping his brow against the heat of the Mexican sun.
Yes, yes. And so he returned to California. He was next heard of in Sacramento.
Sacramento, which is the state capital of California.
There we go.
Nailed it. Huh?
Casey, can we get a correct answer game show? That's perfect.
How about can I get a little round of applause too? A little pat on the back sound? No, it's fine. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You can if you want to. Ah, thanks, Casey.
So Broman has returned, and he's been living in Sacramento. He had been visiting the house of a woman whose last name was Brown, and he went to the chief of police with a story, and he said, "Look, I know we have a history, but I am coming to you as a victim, chief. I've been robbed. I've been robbed of $8,000. You got to help me. It's
eight large?
Yeah, eight big ones.
And big ones. What's some other colloquialisms for $1,000?
In some writing it would be M-I-L, but it doesn't make sense spoken.
Fair. Yeah.
We could make some up. Semolinas.
There you go.
Yeah.
Isn't semolina the stuff that's in pasta?
Yeah, there's also semolina flour.
Yeah, okay, that's why. That's what it is. It's the flour that makes the pasta.
We should keep going.
Oh, I have a question for you, Ben.
Yes.
What's the point of different pasta shapes?
Oh, some of them hold sauces better in different ways because it's like surface area.
I've always been wondering that. Yeah. Thank you, Ben.
That's what I heard. I'm also just making this up. And I want to come clean with everybody. I don't know if W-2 stands for wealthy widow. Write to your local IRS agent and ask them.
Yeah, they'll get right back to you, I'm sure.
tell them it's a matter of national security.
Man, we're really dog paddling on this one, aren't we, Ben?
wait, we got back. Broman though, this is an interesting turn, right? He goes to the cops. He of all people.
He does. What? Yeah. Why would he do that?
Because he said he got robbed of eight semolinas large.
But this man's on the BOLO list at every sheriff's office from Tijuana to San Luis Obispo.
And speaking of like different times, not only do the officers agree to investigate this house with him, but they let him come along as they execute the search warrant.
That's not done.
That's not normal.
No.
I couldn't do that.
I don't think they would do that. It was a different time.
So what happens when they go in there?
Well, the detectives, officers, whatever you want to call them, uh-huh. they searched the premises and they found $20 in gold,
ooh,
which is kind of a lot. If you do the inflation thing, what's that, about $200? I don't know. Yeah. I'm just spitballing it here. You want to do it for real?
Yeah, let's do it for real.
Why not?
So $20 in, again, around the 1890s would be $575 and 6 cents.
Okay. So you know, a decent little haul. And he, Broman, told them that this was something he did. He's like the crazy old lady that keeps all our money in a mattress, only he keeps his under the carpet or hidden beneath the floorboards.
Because of experience, right?
Well, he'd been robbed. I wonder why.
He said, "Oh, see, you believe me now. I got robbed once before, and since then, I always mock my coin."
Mm-hmm. Meaning what? Like he writes his name on it?
Like he maybe puts a specific scratch on it?
So you can see, I got dibsies. Those are mine.
I hate touching change so much. I can't imagine doing that.
Would you consider a gold piece change, though?
I would probably have to just suck it up and touch it.
Like, yeah. Put it in your mouth?
No.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I've triggered you.
Well, Noel, he told the officer to look behind a mirror, and then the officer found a diamond ring. The police said, okay.
Oh, wait. Sorry to interrupt. Ben. Did he have to tell the officers, this is definitely my coin because this is what the marking looks like?
Yes.
Yeah, he did that. Okay, yeah, I'm with you now. I'm back in it.
Because that proved he was associated, right?
Yeah, totally.
But the police, for some reason, still did not believe he was on the up and up. And they said, you know what? I think he's, I don't know what he's getting up to, but he's up to something, by gum.
I mean, did he really think he was going to, like, bamboozle some actual police officers to help him rob somebody's house? Doesn't that kind of seem like what's going on here?
So
he's a real bold fella, this Gustav Broman.
So an officer came from Sacramento to obtain his record at the request of the police. And remember Mrs. Leroy or Mrs. Roy, the widow on Vallejo Street?
Of course.
She gets subpoenaed.
She didn't ask for any of this, Ben.
She did not.
She's just a wealthy widow caught in this man's crossfire, you know? It's not right.
So it turns out Broman had the widow arrested for stealing the diamond ring that he gave her.
I'm sorry?
All class.
You're just adding insult to injury with
All
this guy.
All class.
God, what a D. What a giant D.
Yeah. And the judge was like, lady, you know, this is tough. This is tough all around. Yushev Broman arrested for perjury. So, you know, she swore out a warrant, but apparently it was never solved, and the case in Sacramento was dismissed.
Back to the top of the story.
Yes.
I'm a little confused about what he had to gain from this whole log jamming situation.
Ah, there's an answer.
Oh, good.
There's an answer. Good. Okay. So I was confused too because it was like, I don't quite. His schemes seem to become more and more ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, increasingly circuitous.
Uh-huh, exactly.
I always mock my coin.
Mock my coin. I pee on all of them.
Right. It's very strange.
Yeah.
It's like Tommy Wiseau and the spoons, you know? Here is the theory. The theory comes from a guy named Detective Anthony, who was one of the many law enforcement officials familiar with Broman's escapades. This detective believes that Broman had purposely made a terribly, terribly substandard boat because he wanted it to look like the kind of thing that would easily sink because he was planning on the boat to be found bottom up in some beach, and he was going to essentially commit pseudocide.
Ah, our favorite portmanteau.
Yeah, the word for faking one's death. Yeah. Detective Anthony specifically says, Broman will probably have his life insured for a big sum, and after the boat is found, a Confederate will apply for the insurance money, and he and Broman will share it. That is my belief from my knowledge of this man.
Question. Sorry, I keep asking all these questions. I think this is important.
Yeah.
Why do this so conspicuously? Why make a big show of it?
So we could have a bunch of witnesses,
I guess. Makes no sense. Oh, witnesses to his sad demise.
Yes.
Okay, I guess that makes a little more sense.
So it's like, 4,000 people really did see him do it. And now we see why he was going to sail down the coast of San Francisco first. And then made up this cockamamie story about what he was going to do by turning his boat into a rail car. He had no intention of doing that.
No.
He wanted somewhere between Marshfield and San Francisco for his boat. He wanted to disappear and have his boat wash up on a remote area.
You got to give this guy at least a little bit of credit for his massive cojones.
That's true. See, yeah. That's for that.
Just so massive. That's probably what kept capsizing the boat.
Quite possibly, no. Yeah. Quite possibly.
Yeah.
So how does Detective Anthony's theory measure up?
It measures.
It measures?
Uh-huh.
What happened?
Well, yeah, he had a $15,000 life insurance policy that he took out on himself from the United States Accident Insurance Association. Upon discovering this whole scheme, promptly canceled his policy. Probably a good business move to do that. Surely this guy's reputation for insurance fraud, or at least his, like, because here's the thing. Even when you get paid out for insurance policies, Doesn't that make it harder to get insured again? I guess he insured his brother before, though. But what, yeah. What a series of red flags. You think?
Well, that's the tough thing. There's a great book called Playing Dead, which details the ways in which people can attempt to fake their deaths. And the thing that gets most people caught is when they attempt to receive some kind of money from an insurance agency or a will. Because to do that, you have to have someone you can trust who is able to collect for you. And they don't really have any compelling reason to hold up their side of the bargain. You know what I mean?
I do.
It's also very, very difficult to fake your death, just in case you're wondering, what can I in this modern age do to make my life more interesting? Don't try to fake your death. So that, maybe in lieu of a comic book recommendation, we could just do a book recommendation?
Yeah. You read books?
Playing Dead. I read Playing Dead, A Journey Through the World of Death Fraud by Elizabeth Greenwood.
Weren't we going to maybe have an opportunity to interview Ms. Greenwood?
We did.
On stuff they don't want you to know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Never quite happened. That was our fault, I think, right?
I think we were the ones who dropped the ball.
And now it's like sort of like forgetting someone's name and then knowing them for years and then having to find – it's too late. You can't ask them anymore.
I can follow up with the email thread from 2016.
I have an idea.
What's your idea?
Let's do it for this show, and then it'll be like a fresh start.
There we go. And let's pretend to be different people.
How about that? What's your alter ego of choice lately?
Oh, man, I'm not going to say it on air.
Max Powers, Astronaut with a Secret.
Oh, that's a go-to. Yeah, Max Powers, Astronaut with a Secret. Yeah.
Mine is Neil Braun.
Neil Braun.
Neil Braun.
There we go.
I'm a German attaché.
Nice, I like it.
Or maybe I'll be Swedish.
Nice. Well done. I have been using the alias Casey Pegram for quite some time. And I'm sorry about that, Casey. I did have to stop. I don't know which one of us it was, but the heat got pretty bad at JFK.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You've sullied my good name.
I think you sullied my fantastic alias, Casey. Or maybe there's a third Casey Pegram out there.
There is. I've seen him on Google.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the one then. I was just having fun at a Applebee's.
You like Applebee's too?
Yeah. I'll go to an Applebee's.
What's their signature appetizer? Chicken crispers?
Some kind of chicken thing. We have to ask Paul Deccan about
Paul
that.
Mission Control Deccan is a huge fan of the Applebee's. Because apparently when you're there, your family... No, that's Olive Garden.
That's Olive Garden.
What are you at Applebee's?
It's your friendly neighborhood grill.
There you go.
And by the way, I love the mozzarella sticks.
Mozzarella sticks are usually, you can't really mess up mozzarella sticks, though.
I've seen it happen. It's
no,
a travesty.
It can happen.
Really?
They've, but they do a good job of it over at the Bees.
You like their,
at the Bees.
So what you're saying is they have a nice crispy exterior and a nice soft gooey interior, and they're not so hot that they burn the roof of your mouth.
And they're evenly cooked.
And are seasoned well.
Yeah, all the above.
Okay.
So one time, this has nothing to do with the story of Gustav.
No, we're done, right? We're just talking.
Now we're just talking about how we enjoy Applebee's.
Or other chain restaurants? Should we bring in some other restaurants?
Well,
to the mix?
I wanted this thing about Applebee's for a long time. I thought Paul was just pretending to like it, but he's serious. We were on a video shoot one day, and Casey, were you at that one?
Absolutely, I was. Yeah.
So we were on a video shoot one day years back, and I think I was field producing or something. I said, okay, well, we've wrapped this up. This is a great shoot. It's time to grab lunch. And we jokingly suggested to Paul that there was an Applebee's nearby. He lost his mind, and he had this shining, almost noble, childlike glee.
I looked at it more as the look of a madman.
It's very similar.
Yeah, kind of eyes glazed over, weird rictus smile.
And we went, and I think his joy, his jubilation was contagious. So if you ever want to make Paul Deccan stay, or apparently Casey Pegram's, then send us some Applebee's tickets. Is that the right word?
Gift cards or something.
Gift cards. Yeah. You can buy those at your friendly neighborhood Kroger, CVS even.
Yeah. Or you could just leave us a review on your podcast app of choice.
Yeah, please do. And don't be too harsh on us for this little rambling tangent of an ending of the episode. We don't do it that often, I don't think. And we're having a good time.
We're at the very end of the year.
And the end of our ropes.
And there are so many casual dining restaurants that we didn't get to mention.
What about Bob Evans? Is that the one that's in, that's like only in like Pennsylvania, maybe Canada or something.
Midwest and stuff, yeah.
Their slogan is, everybody is somebody at Bob Evans.
Oh, that's, you know, the intonation very, feels sinister.
It's also very like, yeah, we're all people. We're all here at Bob Evans to have some pancakes.
It's almost existential. Yeah. Man,
we are punchy as can be today. I love it.
The universe is chaotic and meaningless at Bob Evans.
At Bob Evans. Ben.
We got to get out of here.
We got to get out of here. But you know what, dude?
What, no?
It's not true. We're going to record
two
more.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
This is the third.
This is the Christmas episode, if you want to plug that.
Oh. Casey says it's Christmas.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, very popular holiday.
Very popular holiday. You know, celebrated by the religious and the secular alike.
Oh, especially in the U.S.
Especially in the U.S. So, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Whatever you want to call it, to you and yours.
Hope you are having a wonderful time on one more orbit round the sun. And as you look back on 2018, we hope you find it more full of fond memories than unpleasant ones. We hope that you, regardless of your personal beliefs, get some quality time in with your family. If you have that favorite movie you watch, or you have that favorite board game or that family tradition, get together and play it. Yeah. Happy holidays. All the best from all of us to all of you.
Should old acquaintance be forgot on days of old Langston, Langs sign?
Gustav Broman?
There you go.
Oh, before we go. This is, we had to actually travel back in time.
We actually never even explained what the milkshake duck was.
Right, to make this correction, because, I had explicitly promised that. It was the first sentence of the show. So to explain what a milkshake duck is, we have to give a shout out to a Twitter feed called A Very Pixelated Boat Christmas. And this, Noel, you said you had never heard of this before.
No, I only heard of it like the other day. Super producer Casey Pegram turned me onto it.
And I think, you know what, Casey, if you're okay with it, could you read the tweet that gave us the phrase milkshake duck?
Yeah, so this is a tweet originally tweeted out June 12th of 2016, and it has already kind of entered the internet lexicon as like shorthand for this phenomenon. So it says, "The whole internet loves milkshake duck, a lovely duck that drinks milkshakes." 5 seconds later, "We regret to inform you, the duck is racist."
Oh, man. Womp, womp, womp.
So Gustav Broman, in that case, in this sense, is a milkshake duck because he was, for a very brief time, this American hero.
Yeah.